Welcome to The Issue Is. I'm Alex Michelson. This week, Gloria Allred is back with us, plus a conversation with the Deputy Secretary of the Treasury. But we start with Gloria, who is one of our favorite and most frequent guests. It's been a long time since she's been on the show, over a year, which I don't know how that happened. But we certainly have missed her. And it was great to have her back to talk about OJ and Arizona, to talk about Biden and Trump, and really talk about her own story. So here we go, and we start with some music from Green Day. You are listening to Viva La Gloria from Green Day because Gloria Allred is back. One of our most frequent guests. It's been a long time. I think it's been over a year since you've been here on The Issue.
I didn't know what happened. Was it my deodorant or what? What's going on with that? A whole year.
And you were supposed to be on with Larry Elder, who had a last-minute scheduling conflict, so more time for you to talk, which I'm sure you're complaining about.
No, I'm not complaining at all, but I'm always happy to be with you and Larry as well. Yeah. So, Larry, get up your courage and come on with me and debate.
Well, Gloria, it's great to see you. Thanks for being here. Welcome back to The Issue Is. We were going to do this conversation before we knew that this would be the week that O.J. Simpson died. And for people that may not remember, Gloria represented the Brown family, the family of Nicole Brown Simpson. She was in the courtroom with them. She was also with them during the civil trial where he was found liable. Of course, he was acquitted in the criminal trial. As we all sort of think about O.J. Simpson, how do you think he should be remembered?
As a person that a civil jury found was responsible, liable, for the wrongful death of two innocent human beings, Nicole Brown Simpson, his wife and the mother of his two children, and also Ronald Goldman, and also as a convicted felon, because of his conviction in Nevada for armed robbery, kidnapping. And he spent 9 years in prison there. So I think that's the way he should be remembered. He earned that infamous reputation.
Yeah, and I know you've said you don't mourn his loss.
I don't mourn his loss. I do mourn the loss of Nicole Brown Simpson and the impact it's had on her three sisters, and Nicole and Tanya and Dominique. And I feel sad for his children, Sydney and Justin, who are now adults and who now have neither a father nor a mother alive. And I feel really sad for, the loss of Ron Goldman. But that's pretty much it. I think, Mr. Simpson just decided he was above the law. Could get away with anything. It became increasingly emboldened, and he's paid the consequences. Maybe not as much paying of the consequences as many people think he should pay, but he did.
I know you've been involved in so many high-profile cases in nearly 50 years of doing this. Was that the most high-profile? I mean, can you take us being inside that courtroom and sort of describe what that whole thing was like?
The day of the verdict, it was shocking. And we didn't discuss what we had expected to happen, but still, just to hear the words, not guilty. And then we went up to the district attorney's office to discuss that with him. I mean, it was hard to even discuss it because, as was reported, there was a mountain of evidence against him. His blood was all over the crime scene. His DNA had been tested and retested, and it was all there on the crime scene. But it became, something about race rather than about violence against women, particularly against violence and Nicole, whom he had battered 5 years previous to almost decapitating her and leaving her in a pool of blood at the door of her home where the little children were sleeping. So it really, on so many levels was really shocking.
Another big case this week, which is what happened in Arizona.
Yes.
They have now, because of a court order, are set to go back to a law from 1864, which essentially bans all abortions with the exception of the life of the mother. No exceptions for rape or incest, no period at all. this, to you, reminds you of your own personal history here in California.
Yes. My concern, too, is that law, which, by the way, was passed before women even had a right to vote, so they never voted on it. In fact, Arizona wasn't even a state when that law was passed, which restricts and controls women, you know, talks about miscarriage. And we used to have a law in California in the 60s, and I moved to California in the 60s, and again was raped in Mexico and came back and found that I was pregnant. And there was a law in California that anyone who assisted in a miscarriage in California, very similar wording to the Arizona law, you know, could be prosecuted for a criminal act. So therefore, doctors wouldn't and nurses wouldn't help to assist or provide an abortion. So people like me had to go to a back alley abortionist who would do it just for the money, would leave me and many other women just in a pool of blood to fend for themselves, because, as he said, I do the abortion, I don't take care of what happens afterwards. And so he left. And in any event, thank God they took me in the hospital, which they wouldn't take women in the hospital to do an abortion. But if you were bleeding to death, then they could take you in. So I know what that's like to have to suffer under a law like that. It's not yet in effect in Arizona, but soon will be. And this is all as a result of extremism. That's the bad news. The good news is women in Arizona, a lot of them, are mad as hell, and they're not going to take it anymore. They're just not going to have it, whether they're, you know, Democrats or Republicans or independents. They are going to mobilize. And Arizona is one of the swing states, and a very important state for Biden and also for Trump in the Electoral College count in the next election.
Donald Trump says that this should be a state-by-state issue, and there are very different views on abortion in different states. People in California have a different view than maybe people in Mississippi. Why shouldn't it be a state-by-state issue?
Yeah, it shouldn't. You know, and, you know, as former Senator Barbara Mogulsky once said to me, we shouldn't have to do this plantation by plantation. Mm-hmm. In other words, state-by-state. You know, as we say at the rallies, not the church, not the state, women should control our fate. And that's what we want. We don't want states in it. But we don't want a national ban either. And Trump, who says, I won't be for a national ban. We can't trust him. He's a liar, liar, pants on fire kind of guy.
And yet there are tens of millions of Americans who are wanting to support Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. Why do you think that is? Why do you think Biden isn't doing better?
Well, first of all, I think Biden will be doing a lot better before the election. We're all going to work and do our part to help the American people to understand what's at stake. And so I do have confidence in that, but we can't take anything for granted. And we're going to have to work to win it.
In the high-profile trials involving a shooting on the set of the film Rust, Gloria Allred is representing the victim's family. In the civil trial of Roman Polanski, Gloria Allred is representing the plaintiff. As Sean Diddy Combs faces increased scrutiny from the feds, Gloria Allred represents two alleged victims of Diddy. In short, if you see a trend here, Gloria Allred is involved in just about every high-profile story there is and has been for decades. Gloria joins us now again. Gloria, I call you Waldo because, you know, it's like, where's Waldo? You find Waldo in every picture. In every picture of history, there's Gloria. And you're very open about the fact that you're 82 years old now. So I got to ask you, are you running for president?
No.
No. I'm kidding about
I've grown up and I've found out what I want to be.
Yeah.
Lawyer representing victims.
So what keeps you going?
Injustice. And I wake up and every morning and I find out what the injustice is that my clients have suffered. And I want to do something about it. I don't want to just be a witness to injustice. I want to support my client in helping to win accountability and whatever form of justice my client thinks is possible to obtain.
How do you handle the haters? There's been so many of them for so long.
You know, I pretty much just ignore them. I always say if they're calling me names, I know I've won. Because if they had a good argument on the issues, they would present it. And since they don't have a good argument, they're calling names. So that means they're really hauling up the white flag of surrender. So I might as well just not pay any attention to them. Time is precious. I'm not investing it in people who don't have a good argument.
You know, you have worked with the same two law partners for 48 years, which is like unprecedented that's
And one of my partners said he used to have a full head of hair and he's lost every hair on his head because of the cases I make him take. God for them, but Nathan and Michael.
But are any of you even remotely thinking about the R word retirement?
I certainly hope not. I know that I'm not. And I don't think my partner Nathan is. And Michael, you know, I doubt it.
Why is that? I mean, so many other people.
We love what we do. Yeah. We feel blessed to do it. We like, you know, speaking with each other and, you know, having good, healthy debates about issues and cases. And we like winning. And we just love, we feel very blessed to do what we do. So, no, I don't think that's in the future. I could be surprised. I don't know. Not for me. Yeah. I mean, I'm figuring out if after I'm physically not on this planet, I want to still continue helping. So I'm still thinking about how that could be. Because
what does that mean?
Well, I mean, there are many ways to help, even if you're not physically here. Yeah. But right now, I'm just
AI
like...
AI Gloria?
One never knows. One never knows. Okay, maybe I could put my brain in Alex's body, and suddenly he's an attorney, and he's working for victims. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know, look, I feel great. You know, I had a cousin... Uncle Ike, who practiced law till he was about 99 years old. He went to his office every day. And, you know, if you love what you do, and I feel as though it's my duty to do it, I'm blessed and privileged to be able to do this, then that's what I should do. And that's, you know, I speak truth to power, whether they like it, whether they don't like it. Are you listening to me, President Trump, or former President Trump, or soon to be? Potentially felon President Trump. I don't know. But anyway, that's what I do. I speak truth to power, and I feel very lucky to do it.
You were here for our third episode back when we started this show, and you said that I will continue to come back on one condition, which is that I always dance with you.
Well, that's true.
You started the dancing on this show, which has become a thing.
I always dance with you, and then I always, though, insist on leading.
You lead. Well, you are the leader.
There's lead, no, follow, or get the
hell out of the way. So... up next, we have the Deputy Treasury Secretary, and maybe he'll dance on the show. Who knows?
Oh, good.
Our thanks to Gloria Allred. Next up, the Deputy Secretary of the Treasury. Let's start, though, with a look at some economic data. This week, we learned that inflation ticked up a bit to 3.5%. The national unemployment rate is at 3.8%. Wally Adeyemo is the Deputy Secretary of the Treasury. He's the number two person to Secretary Janet Yellen, helping to set fiscal policy for the entire country. And, perhaps most importantly, he was raised in California's Inland Empire and attended UC Berkeley. Mr. Deputy Secretary, welcome to The Issue Is for the first time, and welcome home.
Thank you so much. Great to be home. Great to be here with you.
So let's talk about, if you had to sort of, in a sentence or two, describe what is the state of the U.S. economy right now, what is it?
The U.S. economy is strong and getting stronger. We've got work to do, but the president has a plan to do that work.
What's next when it comes to the economy? I know a lot of people are focused on interest rates. Are we going to see a drop-off in interest rates? What are you forecasting?
I'm focused on what the president has asked me to focus on, which is doing everything we can to lower costs for the American people. We're doing that by lowering the cost of prescriptions for things like if you want to go out and you want to get yourself insulin and you're a senior, we've gotten down to $35. We're seeing that pass on to more Americans. We're focused on doing everything we can to bring down the cost of fuel and seeing what we can do on housing as well in terms of building more housing in places like California and around the country, because we know that one of the things that matter most to Americans is what things cost.
Well, I mean, lowering interest rates would make things cost less too, right? So that happened. You know, obviously, you don't make that. That's
ultimately
the Fed
makes the call on interest rates. But the thing that we do focus on is supply, because the more things you have, the more you are able to meet demand. Just this morning, I was at the Port of Los Angeles. But I was there because we were helping young people do job training, because one of the things we need is more people to work in the economy. So a big thing we're focused on is workforce training so that Californians and Americans can get the skills to do the jobs of the future, not just the jobs of today.
And yet, and there are a lot of really strong economic indicators right now. You look at poll numbers, and they're not great for President Biden when it comes to the economy. This poll recently from CBS News, it shows Americans think that Donald Trump would handle the economy better, 55% to 33%. Why do you think that is? Is that just a messaging problem from the Democrats, or is that a substantive problem?
So part of my role as Deputy Secretary of the Treasury is not to do the politics
of
the Hatch Act. But the thing that I can talk about is the economy, and I think that the choices the president has made have been good for the American people. And when you compare them to where we were 4 years ago, we have to remember where we're coming from, a world in which we dealt with a pandemic where thousands of Americans were dying, where we had unemployment rates that were in the double digits. And today we're in a place where the American economy is growing faster than any economy advanced economy in the world.
Your boss just is back from a trip to China, where she met with folks there. Obviously, the two economies could not be more interlinked. There are some critics, though, of China that describe China as an enemy to the U.S. They certainly are critical of their human rights record. How do you balance that, and what do you say to some of those critics?
She was able to talk to the Chinese about the fact that we have real national security concerns, and this is what we're going to do about them. We're also concerned about what they're doing to make the playing field unlevel for our firms and our workers, and that unless China takes steps, not only the United States is going to act, but the president's going to lead a coalition of other countries that are also going to take actions to hold the Chinese accountable. So part of the goal was to go there and make clear to the Chinese our positions, because it's important for them to hear directly from us.
Another thing that you've been working on recently is for people that are maybe last minute doing their taxes. There is a new program this year called Direct File, where essentially you get free help on your taxes. How does it work? What should people know?
So Direct File is a way that you can file your taxes for free with the IRS. If you are someone who's in California and you're filing a simple tax return, please go to directfile.irs.gov. It's a government program that allows you to file your taxes for free, and it takes you less time than some of the traditional tax preparing software. Talking to people who have filed their taxes using Direct File, what they say is that it's fast. And it's important to remember that on average, people spend more than $200 a year filing their taxes. This is free, so that eliminates that cost for you. But it often takes people up to 13 hours. And many of the people I've talked to said that it took them less than an hour to file their taxes with Direct File. And the last thing I'll say is that if you file your taxes online rather than sending us paper, you're going to get your tax return faster from us as well.
Your check's coming back faster. So this, for a lot of people, will probably be the first time that they've seen you, unless, of course, they knew you as a kid growing up here. Can you tell us a little bit about your story, who you are, how you got to this place?
Yeah, so I went to high school in Rialto, California, in the Inland Empire. It was a place where you had a bunch of people with talent, but you didn't have as much opportunity as you hoped. And I think one of the reasons I got into public service was I wanted to make sure that communities like Rialto, that exist all over California, but truly all over this country, was able to match the talented people that are Americans with the opportunities they deserve.
Is there a scenario where you see yourself running for office here in California?
There's a scenario where I see myself coming home to California, but not to run for office, but rather to see my cute nieces and nephews and to hang out and spend some time on the beach.
That's a no? No, not interested in a political future, really?
That is, I'm very interested in public service, but not in running for office myself.
Okay, well, we play a game on this show called Personal Issues. This is where we do 30 seconds, rapid-fire questions to get to know you a little bit better. In case maybe you run for office or become the Treasury Secretary, who knows? All right, so we'll put 30 seconds on the clock, and first thing that comes to mind, what is your favorite TV show?
Favorite TV show, The West Wing.
Great choice. Favorite book?
Favorite book. Oh, The Grapes of Wrath.
Nice choice. Favorite sports team?
The Los Angeles Lakers.
Let's go. What's your favorite way to relax?
A good book on the beach.
Okay, and who is your role model?
I'd say my parents are my role model.
Why is that?
My parents, when I was two, came to the United States from Nigeria to get an education, and they built a life here in America. My dad was a teacher, my mom was a nurse, and they decided that although they were going to be far away from where they were born, they were going to serve the community that they were in. And they just built a life and a community here in the United States based in service. And they inspired all three of their kids to keep doing that. So my parents are my role model. I'm looking forward to seeing them tonight and getting to spend time with them.
And by the way, we've got to say hi to them as people that live here. So shout out to your parents. Thanks so much for coming in. Up next, we celebrate Bruce Springsteen. So we go to break with Born to Run. Apparently, you're never going to run, but if other people are thinking about that, we play it for that. Thanks so much, Deputy Secretary. Appreciate it.
Thanks
for having your
me.
Time in California.
Great to be home.
We'll be right back. More of The Issue Is after this. Favorite wrestling episode?
Two Cathedrals.
Oh, the best one.
Yeah, hard
that
to
is,
like.
That is the
know,
best choice.
Yeah, hard to like.
Yeah. Do better than one. Two Cathedrals.
Yeah. That's
Our thanks to the Deputy Secretary and to Gloria Allred and to you for listening. Next week on the Issue Is podcast, Meta World Peace is with us to talk about his recent support of Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Nicole Shanahan, plus his mental health work and more, plus a conversation with Harvey Levin. All that next week on the Issue Is. For this week, I'm Alex Michelson. Thanks for listening and have a great week.